Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And we'll actually start today with two program notes, two announcements about our political coverage. One is that for the first time in this Democratic primary season, we have the rights to air the debate tonight. So we will, beginning at 8 o'clock. Usually, when a commercial network has the debate, they hold on to their exclusivity and don't let public radio also air it. If it's a PBS debate, we can, but if it's a commercial network, we usually cannot. But tonight, CNN is allowing us to do it. It's a CNN New York Times debate. So if you don't have cable or satellite TV or the CNN app, or you would just rather listen to it on the radio on WNYC for any reason, that is a choice now. We are an option this time, and we thank CNN on behalf of the public interest. Free radio lives. Free public affairs lives here. 12 candidates, God knows how many moderators from the Times and CNN. It starts there. It starts here tonight at 8 o'clock. The other program note is that our daily impeachment process segments on this show are now also being released as a standalone podcast called Impeachment, a Daily Podcast. Now, for you listening to me right now, it doesn't change anything. If you hear the Brian Lehrer Show, you hear these segments anyway, but also releasing our impeachment segments as a daily podcast will make it available for people anywhere in the U.S. or anywhere in the world who just want to follow impeachment news or hear impeachment conversations like we have here. So no change for you, but here's what I'd love you to do, if you're willing, spread the word. If you have friends or relatives anywhere in America or anywhere at all, not WNYC listeners already, maybe not from this area, if they're following the impeachment news, just let them know via social media, text, phone call, carrier pigeon, whatever. Share the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, as they say, or however you want to do it. But if you're willing, you can tell people outside our listening area that we have a new podcast as of today called Impeachment, a Daily Podcast from WNYC and the Brian Lehrer Show. It will be released every afternoon about 1 o'clock as, you know, we nip and tuck a little bit of what we do on the live show, post-produce it a little bit, and we'll release it every afternoon at around 1 o'clock. Thanks a lot. And it is the impeachment news that's first up on the show this morning, so here we go. I sure wish I could have been a fly on the wall for 9 hours yesterday when President Trump's former advisor on Russia and Ukraine, Fiona Hill, was testifying behind closed doors to three House committees. Now, people who were there have been describing parts of it to the media, and reportedly, it was epic, not just for being 9 hours long, but for the things she described. Who is Fiona Hill? She's one of those career foreign policy professionals who have taken heat from both sides, honestly. Progressives didn't like the fact that she was willing to go to work for Trump in the first place, you know, normalizing Donald Trump with her credibility. But when it turned out that she adhered to normal standards of professional behavior, she and the true Trumpists fell out with each other, and now Fiona Hill is out of that office, and she is dishing. The most dramatic testimony involved John Bolton. Remember when we all thought Bolton was the most explosive guy in the room, right? He's the one who was the big America firster in the George W. Bush administration, all brash toward everyone else when we went rogue with the Iraq War. And more recently, he's been the loudest voice in the Trump administration for wanting to bomb Iran. When Trump appointed Bolton as his national security advisor, remember it was not that long ago. It wasn't that long ago. People thought, oh no, Trump and Bolton together? Somebody please hide the nuclear button before it's too late. That John Bolton. But according to the New York Times account of Fiona Hill's testimony yesterday, John Bolton called Rudy Giuliani a hand grenade who's going to blow everybody up. That was attributed as a quote. Bolton called Giuliani a hand grenade that's going to blow everybody up. And there was this tense meeting about Ukraine back on July 10th, where they were discussing this thing, the actual thing that might wind up getting the president impeached, that Rudy and Trump's ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, and Trump's acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, were pressuring the newly elected president of Ukraine, President Zelensky, to investigate the Bidens in exchange for favors from the U.S. government. And who turns out to be the heavy who wouldn't go along with the scheme? John Bolton. John Bolton, of all people, wanted to be the straight shooter who plays by the rules, according to Fiona Hill. And Bolton's quotable quote at that moment, quote, "I am not part of whatever drug deal Sondland and Mulvaney are cooking up." And of course, he meant drug deal as a metaphor for this Ukraine scheme. But that's a moment from Fiona Hill's testimony yesterday. According to the New York Times account, with those John Bolton quotes, Rudy Giuliani is a hand grenade who's going to blow everybody up. And the scheme to get Ukraine to investigate Biden was a drug deal. That account from Trump's own former Russia and Ukraine advisor, Fiona Hill, according to a New York Times account of her testimony yesterday, the Times attributed all that to three people who heard it. There is so much more testimony to come this week, so watch this space and wherever else you get your impeachment news. And right now, let's talk to a key member of Congress about this. He is Hakeem Jeffries, New York City Democrat. He's the chair of the House Democratic Caucus, making him one of Nancy Pelosi's top deputies. And he is a member of the House Judiciary Committee, which, of course, is the one that would have to vote first on articles of impeachment if they get that far. Hello, Congressman Jeffries. Thanks for coming on today.
Good morning, Brian. Great to be with you.
To be clear, the Judiciary Committee was not one of the three taking this testimony from Fiona Hill yesterday. So you were not in the room, right?
That's correct.
But what have you heard? Have you talked to any of your colleagues from the other committees?
I have not had the opportunity yet to talk to any of my colleagues from the committees. We'll be briefed by them later on today. Everyone beyond those three committees is just returning to Washington for the beginning of the congressional session today. But from the standpoint of what has been publicly reported, it was certainly explosive. And again, the more we learn about what has occurred in this whole sordid Trump-Ukraine scandal, the worse it gets for the president. He clearly abused his power. He clearly undermined our national security. And he clearly betrayed his oath of office in a manner that is unbecoming of the president of the United States of America.
As a New Yorker, you know Rudy Giuliani as his career for a long time. He was a, you know, law and order mayor. He was very racially polarizing. Do you think he's now a hand grenade who's going to blow everybody up, meaning a catalyst for the president's impeachment?
Well, it certainly was a colorful description apparently attributed to John Bolton. I know Rudy Giuliani to be a failed mayor, a failed presidential candidate, and now a failed attorney who may himself find himself on the other side of the law as it relates to the Ukrainian situation. And what is clear is that he was doing the bidding of the president of the United States of America. And, Brian, we know that because the rough transcript of the July 25th call, Rudolph Giuliani's name, I believe, was mentioned five or six times, the majority of which were by the president of the United States, who directed the Ukrainian president to look out for Rudolph Giuliani in connection with the effort to dig up dirt on Joe Biden. And so we may see the president try to run away from Rudolph Giuliani. It's impossible, because his own words connect him to Rudolph Giuliani in a very troubling way.
And listeners, we can take phone calls for Congressman Hakeem Jeffries. Your reaction to Fiona Hill's testimony as it's been reported, or anything else you want to ask Congressman Jeffries, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Another thing that John Bolton did, according to the account of Fiona Hill's testimony yesterday, was to instruct one of his aides to alert White House lawyers or National Security Council lawyers, maybe that's the same thing, about what Trump and Rudy and the others were up to with Ukraine. That's when he called it a drug deal. Is this the first you heard of that referral to legal counsel inside the administration by John Bolton?
Yes, but it is consistent with a pattern of what has occurred as it relates to Trump's own appointees being deeply troubled by the president's effort to pressure the Ukrainian government to target an American citizen for political gain. We have John Bolton, apparently very troubled, directed his aide to refer the matter to White House counsel. You have the general counsel of the CIA, a Trump appointee, who was troubled by the facts that it had emerged and made a criminal referral from the CIA to the Department of Justice. You have Trump's acting director of national intelligence, who made clear in public testimony that the whistleblower acted in good faith and that the whistleblower followed the applicable laws. You had Trump's intelligence community inspector general, again, an appointee of the president, say that the whistleblower raised a matter of urgent concern and a matter that needed to be acted upon. And so we're going to follow the facts. We're going to apply the law. We're going to be guided by the Constitution. But the emerging picture is that people within the Trump administration, who the president himself appointed, recognized that there was serious wrongdoing that was occurring, and that wrongdoing may trace directly to the president of the United States of America.
So let's take a step back. Congressman, you're on the Judiciary Committee, which would be the first to vote on articles of impeachment. How do you see this Fiona Hill, John Bolton information playing into any article of impeachment that you might help to write, or how would it inform your vote on impeachment itself?
Well, from a process standpoint, the Intelligence Committee, under the leadership of Chairman Adam Schiff, who's doing a phenomenal job, is going to continue to take the lead from an investigative standpoint, because this whole situation relates to a matter of national security, and that's the committee's jurisdiction. At the conclusion of the Intel Committee's investigation, they will presumably make a recommendation as to whether the House Judiciary Committee should consider articles of impeachment. At the same time, under the impeachment inquiry umbrella that Speaker Pelosi has articulated, you have other committees such as the Foreign Affairs Committee and the Oversight Committee, as well as the Ways and Means Committee and the Financial Services Committee, that may also make recommendations at some point in the future to the Judiciary Committee as to potential articles. Then the Judiciary Committee, under the leadership of Chairman Nadler, will decide how to proceed. What I will say is that, again, the more we learn about the wrongdoing of the President of the United States that is now hiding in plain sight, the worse it becomes, and the clearer it becomes that the President had abused his power.
So let me ask you a pushback question from, let's say, a Republican member's perspective or a Trump supporter's perspective as it regards impeachment. The President is allowed to make foreign policy, right? If he does it through his national security advisor, who he appointed, John Bolton in this case, that's his choice. Or if he does it through his ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, and his acting White House Chief of Staff, Mick Mulvaney, and his private lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, who says he's been authorized by the State Department, the president under the Constitution still has the authority to conduct foreign policy. What's impeachable about that?
Well, again, we're going to follow the facts, and I'm not going to make any determination one way or the other as to any possible recommendation since I sit on the Judiciary Committee. But let's be clear about a few different things. One, Rudolph Giuliani is not an ambassador. Rudolph Giuliani does not work for the State Department. Rudolph Giuliani is not a Foreign Service officer. Obviously, he's not a cabinet-level official. He's a political thug who was doing the president's bidding. And that in and of itself is an abuse of power and is not authorized. Even Mike Pompeo, I believe, indicated that Rudolph Giuliani was not operating within the authorization of the Department of State. If we take a step back and look at the entirety of this episode, it really begins with the fact that Congress, on a bipartisan basis, allocated $391 million in military and economic and diplomatic aid to Ukraine. Ukraine is a friend, Russia is a foe. Ukraine is a democracy. Russia is a dictatorship. Ukraine is currently under attack by Russian-backed separatists. And the United States is probably the only thing standing between Vladimir Putin and Ukraine being completely overrun. In that context, in February, the administration says to Congress in a letter that the aid to the Ukraine that we authorized is on the way, but it never arrived. And then in May of this year, the Department of Defense again wrote to Congress and said the aid to the Ukraine is on the way. And most importantly, Brian, all necessary preconditions have been met by the new Ukrainian government, including the implementation of anti-corruption protocols. That's a key phrase. That letter will be an important part of our inquiry as we move forward. Yet, once again, the aid never arrived. Twice during the summer, Mitch McConnell, Senate Republican Majority Leader, called over to the administration, said, "Where's the aid?" He didn't get a good answer, because there is no good answer, and that's in the public domain. Then you have the July 25th phone call where the president clearly pressures the Ukrainian president to target an American citizen, Joe Biden, for political gain, dig up dirt, and thereby solicits foreign interference in the 2020 election. That is clearly an abuse of power. The Ukrainian president appears to have agreed, and then subsequently, the aid in September is finally released. That is the result of a high-pressure tactic where the president basically is undermining our national security for his own political gain. He has turned the Oval Office into the Trump campaign reelection headquarters. That's not acceptable.
So one of my main theories about where this is headed is this. It's more or less going to come down to, yes, Trump did it. He asked a foreign president to investigate a potential political rival, Joe Biden, and at least implied to that foreign head of state that he could get official favors for doing it, a White House meeting that President Zelensky wanted, and that military aid to fend off Russia. So let's say the evidence becomes irrefutable that Trump did it in the ways that you've been describing, and Trump did it in the ways that the American people can understand. The question will become, is this bad enough to override the results of the 2016 election and actually remove Trump from office? So that's my question to you right now. Bottom line, let's say Trump did it. Is it serious enough for removal?
Well, that's a question for the Senate. And as you know, under the constitutional fabric, what the House is charged to do is to investigate possible impeachment. That's what we're doing right now with the inquiry. And then based on the recommendation that we may receive from the Intel Committee, the Judiciary Committee will have to make some decisions. If we make the decision to move forward with articles of impeachment, that effectively is an indictment of the president. What we are saying is that there is sufficient information for the Senate to consider removal. But that's hypothetical at this particular point, because what we're doing is just engaged in an exploration of the truth. No evidence has emerged, consistent with your question, Brian, to exonerate the president. But consistent with past practice, we're going to give him an opportunity to make his case, to present some evidence to the extent that it may exist, that there actually was a legitimate reason for holding up the aid to the Ukraine.
Right. But let me jump in, because my question is premised on the notion that he did it, and it becomes crystal clear to everybody that he did it. Is it bad enough to take him out?
Well, that's a question for the Senate, right? And so I'm not.
But if you impeach him in the House, which is the question for the House, that means you're indicting him, as you know, the analogy to a prosecutor, the grand jury before the jury. The Senate's the jury, but it would mean that you're taking the position that this is bad enough to remove him, right?
Correct. The House would be taking the position under that scenario. And in fact, there will be impeachment managers appointed by Nancy Pelosi, presumably in consultation with Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff, to make that case in the Senate. But we're not there yet. We may very well be, consistent with the scenario that you laid out. And under that scenario, the actual prosecutors, consistent with this being an indictment, are members of the United States House of Representatives who will be known as impeachment managers. But again, I don't want to get out ahead of that because we are still making sure we communicate this story to the American people. There have been witnesses who have come forth over the last few weeks. There will be additional witnesses that will continue to testify, including the Trump ambassador to the European Union on Wednesday. He, of course, famously sent a text which said no quid pro quo, but we believe he's going to testify that he had no basis for making that assertion. And if you actually read the electronic exchanges, it's so clear that it was basically covering for some wrongdoing that occurred. Yes. And we'll see what he has to say on Wednesday.
That's Gordon Sondland, one of those people who John Bolton was kind of speaking back to or about the material that Fiona Hill unveiled yesterday. And I think his testimony is Thursday, but listeners, if you don't know that name, know that name, because he's going to continue to be central. He seems to be a Trump loyalist in this, but he will be testifying, Gordon Sondland, and he seems to be in the middle of it. Let's take a phone call. Mary, you're on WNYC with Congressman Jeffries. Hi.
Yes, hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call, and great show, perfect for our time, as always. Congressman Jeffries, I'm wondering, does former Mayor Giuliani have a appropriate secret clearance? Is that something that, as part of the investigation, is that something that's going to be looked into?
Mary, that's a great question. We don't believe that he has a security clearance, that he undertook the necessary background steps consistent with someone who would be acting on behalf of the president dealing with foreign countries and foreign entities. And if, in fact, it turns out to be the case and our suspicions are confirmed, that would be another damning piece of evidence that Rudolph Giuliani, of course, was engaged as a political thug acting on behalf of Donald Trump to pressure a foreign government to target a foreign an American citizen and to thereby solicit foreign interference in the 2020 election.
Giovanni, you're on WNYC with Congressman Hakeem Jeffries. Hi, Giovanni. Giovanni, you there? You have a question?
Hello?
Hi, Giovanni. You're on the air.
Good morning. The question I have for the Congressman is simply this. By having all these leaks that come out of, for example, the meeting yesterday with Fiona Hill, how does this help the prosecution? You're in the inquiry stage right now, and I would think that if you wanted to get all the best possible people to come forward, why would you allow, or have somebody allow, a congressman to come out and say, well, this is what's happened, and this is what this person said? I mean, it's like trying the president in the public, and the public is a jury. Now, I'm not any fan of this president, but I am a fan of the judicial system, and I think this information, after you get it together and you have enough information for the inquiry, should go directly to the impeachment stage, where it will be covered word for word.
Congressman, why behind closed doors? And if closed doors, why the leaks?
Well, I'm not sure where the leaks are coming from. I think that all the members of the Intel Committee, as well as the other relevant committees of jurisdiction led by Adam Schiff, have conducted themselves in an incredibly appropriate way. This is a serious matter. We're going to approach it with the solemnity that it deserves. The Intel Committee traditionally conducts depositions and acquires information because of the sensitive nature of the information that they're seeking in these closed-door depositions. At some point, presumably, there may be open testimony, and the president will have an opportunity to refute that testimony, as he essentially has had even in these depositions, because these aren't just Democratic members of the House who sit on these committees. They're Republican members, Devin Nunes, Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows. These aren't exactly shrinking violets. They are all in these depositions as well, and they have had an opportunity to question these witnesses. What we're seeing is that...
But let me jump in on that, because Republicans are complaining that Fiona Hill's testimony and the other witnesses that House committees are hearing right now are testifying in private. They want it all out in the open, as the caller was saying. And at very least, they want the full transcripts released. So why do this without the sunshine of public hearings? And at very least, why not release the full transcripts that have that pushback that you were referring to a minute ago from the Republican members, their questioning, and Fiona Hill's responses and other witnesses' responses, rather than make the public start making world-altering judgments based on leaks to the New York Times?
Well, that's a great question. I presume at some point the entire transcripts will be released, but the Republicans can't have it both ways. You know, on the one hand, when you have an open hearing, you've got individuals like Corey Lewandowski who show up clearly not to participate in any real search for the truth, but to perform for the puppet master who's sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue pulling his strings. And they say, well, this is not a serious effort to try to find the facts and draw some conclusions. Now they're complaining that you have these solemn procedures that are taking place behind closed doors in a deposition setting. At some point, the testimony will be released, but they're complaining about that. Why are they basically on both sides of the same issue, Brian? Because they can't defend the indefensible. They have no argument on substance here, so they're raising outlandish procedural arguments. To the extent that this comes before the Judiciary Committee, there will be open testimony, I presume, after Chairman Schiff makes recommendations as to how to proceed, and that the protocol that is followed in the context of potential impeachment of the President of the United States will certainly be followed.
Republicans are also claiming that the whole impeachment inquiry so far is invalid. The president used that word because you didn't take a full House vote to authorize it. Speaker Pelosi just declared it. Now, there's no law that says you needed a full House authorization vote to start this inquiry. Certainly not in the Constitution that you need it. But yesterday I asked former Ohio Governor John Kasich, who, as you know, is a House Republican in the 90s and voted for Bill Clinton's impeachment, why they took a full House vote just to launch the inquiry back then. Listen.
It's a matter of fairness. It's a matter of giving those in the minority, or in the majority for that matter, an opportunity to review everything and to have it's a much more impactful process that really has weight in the courts if you're seeking additional information to get tied up in the courts. And it also establishes some rules. You want to have fair play, and you want to let the facts determine where we proceed on this.
So if that was good enough for the Newt Gingrich House, and as Governor, former Congressman Kasich was saying there, it also helped the House's case in court when and if the Clinton administration didn't want to provide witnesses or testimony or documents, as we're certainly seeing from the Trump administration now, why isn't it good enough for your and Nancy Pelosi's House?
Well, Nancy Pelosi is a constitutional officer. The Speaker is one of the few offices mentioned by name in Article 1 of the United States Constitution. When she declares that we're in an impeachment inquiry, that has the full force and weight of the United States Constitution, as well as the House rules. As you indicated, nothing indicating that we need to take a formal vote. You also have the overwhelming majority of the House Democratic Caucus and one independent publicly expressing support for an impeachment inquiry, so everybody knows what the outcome would be of a formal vote. That said, the Speaker has indicated that it is something that we may consider doing, but it is not something that is necessitated by the Constitution, by the Supreme Court precedent, by the House rules, or any particular federal law. Again, it's just simply an effort by my friends on the other side of the aisle to divert attention away from the fact that they cannot address the abuse of power and the undermining of the integrity of our elections and our national security concerns that were raised by the wrongdoing committed by the President of the United States, Donald Trump.
By the way, on the hearings being closed door, at this point, a listener tweets at Brian Lehrer, It's been argued that the closed-door depositions are to keep one witness's testimony, not affecting witnesses yet to depose. Is that a reason?
Well, certainly, I think that that is an important part of the process that the Intel Committee is following, and depositions are not unprecedented in the context of any committee investigation. In fact, there were several depositions that were taken by the House Judiciary Committee and other investigative committees earlier this year. For instance, Hope Hicks' testimony was in the form of a deposition behind closed doors. It wasn't an open hearing process. That doesn't mean that there's not an open engagement and a search for the truth that is occurring. Again, you have lawyers representing both sides of the committee, and you obviously have members as well, Republicans and Democrats, who are participating in these depositions. And the full transcript, I believe, will be released at the appropriate time in a manner that does not color the testimony of other witnesses.
We're almost out of time. I'm not going to go down the list of other witnesses scheduled to testify this week, but suffice to say, we may have stories like these Fiona Hill bombshells every day this week from other administration insiders. But one guy I'm interested in is Michael McKinley, another new name to the general public. McKinley resigned suddenly last week as an aide to Secretary of State Pompeo, and now he's volunteered to testify tomorrow. And without those strings attached of being a current Trump and Pompeo employee, he can't. Any idea what Michael McKinley might want to expose? Is he on your radar yet?
Yes, and this will be another example of former Trump appointees stepping forward as American patriots to tell the truth about what occurred, which was the hijacking of American foreign policy for the president's own political purposes. My expectation is that he will express serious concern with the wrongdoing that took place and may shed some light on the role that Mike Pompeo has played in this whole affair, because that's unclear. He refused, meaning Secretary Pompeo, to answer the question as to whether he actually met with Rudolph Giuliani overseas. It appears that he did. We need to know what was discussed there. And so McKinley may shed some light on Pompeo's role, who we know, Brian, was also on the July 25 phone call. Didn't have a word to say about it until it was exposed. And we need to know, was Secretary Pompeo troubled by those five words that the president uttered that will live in infamy as it relates to this time in history? Do us a favor, though. Those were the words issued by the president of the United States. Pompeo was on that call. It'll be interesting to see what McKinley has to say about it.
New York City Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, member of the House Judiciary Committee. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Brian.